You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
The Director Series is made possible by the support of our subscribers on Special. Subscribe today at special.tv/The Director Series and gain access to exclusive full-length Director Series episodes and other bonus content, ad-free. Welcome to the Director Series podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile.
During this time, Kubrick was developing a follow-up feature with Fear and Desire's Howard Sackler, which he would eventually call Killer's Kiss. It was a tough, gritty story about an idealistic boxer raging against the criminal world as he attempts to extricate his love from their clutches. It was at once both a noir thriller and a romance whose mainstream sensibilities he hoped would bring him the success that had so far eluded him.
It's crazy how you can get yourself in a mess sometimes and not even be able to think about it with any sense, and yet not be able to think about anything else. You get so you're no good for anything or anybody. Maybe it begins by taking life too serious. Anyway, I think that's the way it began for me.
Despite his ambitions, Kubrick's efforts were not on the most solid of foundations. The 26-year-old director was on welfare during production, and most of the financing was borrowed once again from his wealthy uncle, the owner of a prominent drugstore in the city.
You're doing all right for yourself.
What do you mean? Oh, he just lives in the building.
Oh. He used to be a pretty good fighter.
Frank Silvera is the only holdover talent from Kubrick's earlier feature, and he shows a decent amount of range as the seedy boss Vincent Rapallo. His worldly, weary cynicism serves as a decent foil to Jamie Smith's idealistic, naive boxer Davy Gordon.
Something's happened.
I know.
Do you know?
Sure. You kissed me.
Is that all?
That's all I saw, and I was watching all the time.
As a love interest Gloria Price, Irene Kane fills a necessary void in the story with a soft-edged femme fatale archetype that leaves a lot to be desired. Kubrick's wife, Ruth, makes a short cameo as Gloria's deceased sister and accomplished ballerina in a flashback sequence. Once again, Kubrick himself served as both the cinematographer and the editor. His background in photography serves him well here, with the cinematography being one of the film's strongest assets. The black and white 35mm film image might be cheap by its nature, but Kubrick imbues it with dark, rich shadows and a fantastic sense of depth that suggests a budget three times its size. Kubrick lights Killer's Kiss like a polished Hollywood noir film, creating evocative compositions whose deep focus draws us further into his world. The camera work matches this approach, such as in a moment when Kubrick solely dollies down the length of a dance hall to add grandeur and scale despite the relative cheapness of the technique. Indeed, many of these shots were achieved from the back of a pickup truck, which came in handy when Kubrick's inability to secure location permits often necessitated a covert approach. Killer's Kiss stands out among Kubrick's filmography in that the polish is countered by a measure of spontaneity, a trait that Kubrick would abolish entirely in later works. The film cuts away to gritty street details quite frequently, giving us a sense of place and liveliness that one could see influencing a young John Cassavetes.
Come on, give me back the scarf.
Kubrick's on-location depiction of New York stands as the most potent example of this dynamic. He makes great use of the dramatic skyline and looming architecture to add drama and grit, in the process capturing an authentic lived-in cityscape. Contrast these images with Kubrick's last work, Eyes Wide Shut, with New York streets being recreated on a soundstage so Kubrick could exert complete control over his shot. This approach extends to the boxing sequences, where Kubrick opts for a handheld documentary look, an expressionistic point of view angle that predate Martin Scorsese's dreamlike fight scenes in Raging Bull by 25 years. The expressionism on display also extends to a short dream sequence in which the camera screams down a long urban corridor at breakneck speed, the black and white image flipped to its negative. Visually arresting on its own, the shot anticipates the famous space tunnel sequence in 1968's 2001, A Space Odyssey, and is one of the earliest instances of Kubrick's fondness for one-point perspective in his compositions. Killer's Kiss serves as a neat little distillation of Kubrick's two main thematic fascinations, violence and sex. The boxing world is inherently violent, of course, but Kubrick's story seems to merge the two acts. one an act of destruction and the other an act of creation, until their boundaries blur ambiguously. In the world of Killer's Kiss, sex is violent and violence is intimate. Nowhere is this blur more apparent than in the film's climax, where the hero and the villain savagely duke it out against a backdrop of mannequins. Their cold, statuesque beauty echoes Gloria, and on a literal level, we're visually reminded that the two men are fighting over her as the ultimate prize. However, their presence underscores the intimate feminine aspect of violence, the aspect that requires the two fighters to lose themselves in the moment and express their feelings up close with their bodies. The climactic chase sequence also serves as an exploration of dehumanization, with the characters framed in wide shots, dwarfed by monolithic structures and cold, unfeeling cityscapes. Endless brick walls tower over them in an almost abstract fashion, heightening the hero's need to escape the city because his relative insignificance within it threatens to consume him entirely. For the longest time, Killer's Kiss was Kubrick's first official feature, and despite it being shot very similarly to Fear and Desire, Kubrick did not seem as embarrassed about the former's roughness and lack of polish. It's not hard to see that Killer's Kiss is a marked improvement over his earlier work, with his evolution very apparent in every frame. We can see that Kubrick's direction is much more confident, having grasped concepts like pacing and geography while coming up with creative, bold compositions. Killer's Kiss shows us a gifted young man coming into his own and starting to find his aesthetic, solidifying tastes that would inform one of the richest and most compelling filmographies the art form would ever see.
Thank you for listening to the Director Series. For a deeper dive into your favorite filmmakers, go to www.directorseries.net. The Director Series is made possible in large part by our generous supporters on Patreon. Please visit us at patreon.com/directorseries to see how your contribution enables the continued production of video essays and text articles on your favorite contemporary and classic film directors. Thank you.